This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm in the greatest stadium ever built. That's $5.5 billion behind me with a $1 billion screen, and I have a billion-dollar guest joining me on the Playbook, Dane Walker from Down Under, the founder of Rival. Welcome to the Playbook.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited, and I've never seen such a glorious backdrop. I thought it wasn't real when I joined, and then I learned you're actually there.
Yeah, I have to put my hand through there so crazy. People realize it or get people to run behind me. But, you know, Dane, I've been a big fan of yours for a while. We've been mutual admirers of each other from across the world, and we finally got to run into each other while we were in Mexico City with the extraordinary Tom Brady, Chicharito, Tom Bilyeu. There couldn't have been a better series of people, a neighborhood of enlightened people trying to elevate others. But the one thing that a lot of us have in common is a question I ask when I start speaking on stages, and it's applicable to Mexico City. It's who here grew up poor? And about half the audience always raises their hand. And then my normal follow-up is, oh, I feel sorry for the rest of you. You and I both grew up poor. Our own situation, but those are the type of things that make us who we are, plant seeds to the trees of success that we sit under today. What are some of the things that you feel you have benefited from growing up poor?
Yeah. So, I grew up with a single mother and to add to that, you know, I was in and out of foster care, throughout different periods, and my mother struggled with addiction. And I think for me as a kid, I learned from a very young age how to be, I guess, really self-sufficient and like really independent on my own right. So like, you know, even from the age of like 4, 5, and 6, I remember being in some pretty dark situations and having to kind of be hyper aware of the danger around me and think for myself. And I think, you know, that sounds horrendous for a child to go through, but like in hindsight, when I sit with that, it gave me an extraordinary amount of like, I guess, awareness and sensitivity to like people. So when I meet people today, I can get a vibe pretty quickly. I can predict like a situation that might have a lot of danger in it that other people can't see. But when it comes to business, I think I just have a really great capacity to deal with a high volume of stress and be pretty zen about it. You know, I've been in situations where other people are pretty stressed or pretty overwhelmed and hitting a wall, and I'm pretty calm, cool, collected, and just starting to think about how do we navigate out of this. So I think it gave me a gift and an ability to be able to, really cognitively function in a high stress situation. And I think the greatest part of it just gave me a lot of empathy for people that don't have much. And, you know, as soon as I started to have success, the first thing I wanted to do was like find other people and help them, you know, and I think that comes back to humble beginnings. I think that story arc, you know, the hero's journey, whatever it is, I think being able to literally start with nothing and build a business to what it is now and have that background, it gives me a lot of ability to empathize with all kinds of people from all different walks of life and all different situations, whereas not everyone could do that. So I actually think it's been a gift in my business, a gift to connect with people and a gift to just have hyper awareness in business.
Yeah, I think from afar, I've noticed an extreme emotional intelligence that you possess that has helped you become the authority that you are today. But even in that journey, I know myself, I had to develop a different relationship with money. And the success itself, until I developed that relationship, actually could be seen as a punishment or detriment to my own fulfillment, passion, purpose, and even my future profitability. How has your relationship with money evolved since you grew up, you know, under the philosophy of money doesn't grow on trees to where you are today with the extreme financial success that you've experienced and enjoy?
It's a really good question. Something I've actually, I guess, toiled with a fair bit. And I remember, I was asked a question by a guy named Cohen Ray. You might not know him, but he's pretty prominent here in Australia. And he said to me, he's like, Dane, if you close your eyes right now and imagine what money looks like, what does it look like to you? And I closed my eyes and I just saw this giant, terrifying monster, like this big, ugly ogre of a thing that had power over me and created pain. And I was like, holy crap, man, my relationship with money is like pretty nasty. Like it's a very unconscious thing. It's such a weird question, but I closed my eyes, imagined this creature. And I was like, no wonder I don't have money. No wonder I'm in debt. Like, you know what I mean? It was this epiphany. And for me, I realized I had to change how I had a relationship with money. And I started to realize that, you know, money is just, it's essentially energy, as woo-woo as that sounds. It's an exchange of energy, right? So when I started to allow that energy into my life, money started to show up, opportunities started to show up, things started to happen. I started to, instead of resist and fight and see money as this negative, evil thing, I started to realize like, oh, money's this helpful, fruitful, positive thing. I just need to be aware of like my relationship with it. And as weird as it sounds, when I shifted my relationship to like, you know, from everyone's out to get me, bad things happen often, to everyone's out to help me, money comes easily and frequently. And when I just started shifting my unconscious dialogue with myself about what money was, like literally within weeks, things started to shift. I know that sounds crazy, but like the whole energy thing is a big one for me. And then I started to realize that money likes system, money likes structure, money likes to be used. It doesn't like to just sit in a bank. It wants to percolate. It wants to be put into something. So I find that when money arrives, I find creative and interesting things to put it into, and then more money arrives and it just percolates and amplifies from my experience.
Well, it definitely doesn't seem weird to me, because I'm a firm believer that money's energy, and it's not Shrek, the big green ogre of our lives that so many people yeah. envision when they think of money. But that money being energy, you know, the three characteristics of energy, Dane, are one, it aggregates, it attracts more of it. It compounds exponentially, so it grows exponentially, which has great favor in our lives, but also accelerates, so it comes faster. And so when you talk about the immediacy of the outcomes in which you desired, once you shifted your unconscious and subconscious perception of that energy, there's no doubt that although some people may call it woo-woo, I call it the truth, or the participation in the perception that's much more healthy. Now, there were several authorities that you looked up to in your life, and you've read a lot of those authorities and transferred a lot of the information from your heroes that you read about. But in order to become an authority yourself, to have a podcast like The Tiger Table, to write a book like The 90-Day Brand Plan, and to become an authority, I believe you have to at least question authority to become an authority, or at least be stubborn enough to, or unrelenting enough to not adhere to what authorities or people who love you are telling you what's best for you. What has been your experience with authority? And do you see it as a tangential perspective that has allowed you to become an authority?
That's a really good question, man. I think for me personally, I've always had like this rebellious bone in my body to challenge everything. And I don't know if that stems from my childhood. I don't know. Cause I was like, you know, as a kid, I went to 36 different schools. I was always the new kid. Teachers always had a problem with me because I was wearing rags, or I was like, you know, the ragtag like kid that, you know, lived in conditioned housing or whatever. Right. So like, I always just kind of had this chip on my shoulder from a young age. I'm like, oh, like, people aren't really, I guess in my childhood, they weren't really accepting of me. They weren't really welcoming of me. So like authority represented to me like this collective of people that had a problem with me or oppositional to me. So I just kind of developed this anti-authority complex, which does bleed into my branding. I'm like, how do we build brands that are not the status quo? How do we reinvent them? Like I'm quite contrarian by nature. This is why I love characters like, you know, Steve Jobs. He's just kind of like, how do I challenge the whole system? So I was always attracted to those maverick type characters in business, and drew a lot of inspiration from that. But for me, as someone who's been able to build an authority figure for myself, I like to think about that in a way of like, I'm out here to help people. I'm out here to liberate people. I'm out here to try to inspire and teach and educate and impart energy to others. So I don't like authority from a fear grip perspective or do as you're told perspective. I like authority from like, let me support you, let me help you, let me back you up, let me hold you up when you don't feel like you can, or let me help you discover your genius and amplify that. So I kind of take that approach, if that makes sense. Yes. But yeah, it also stems from my childhood, man, big time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it certainly makes sense. And whether it's Branson, Jobs, or Einstein, all had the same perspective and mindset that you have. And with your company Rival, Australia's fastest growing agency, building brands in a different methodology and in a different way. And for me, one of the things that I believe about brand, and I've been building brands probably longer than you've been alive in a traditional sense with the biggest names in sports and entertainment, I've learned that it's really about community. And today, the total addressable community is exponentially so much larger than even the great sports stars or entertainers that I was blessed to help or assist in building a brand or building a community for. The prospect and opportunities and options that exist in building brands today, and you systematically have put it together in a book, having a 90-day brand plan to help people with the insurmountable scale, scope, and size of this addressable community. How much today do you believe that brand plan, your 90-day brand plan, is effectuating a size of a huge possible community versus forcing a communication with the brand itself instead of an invitation to a big community for those who will resonate with the brand or communication that you create?
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes the misaligned perception of branding can be like, if I were to create a brand, right, let's just say for the listeners, they're like, okay, I want to create a personal brand for myself. You know, usually the first thought is like, how do I push myself out there into the world? Like, how do I, for a better, maybe not the best term, but like, how do I impose myself out there so I get attention and get seen? Whereas I think it's actually inverted. And it's like, how do I create a space where I can invite people into versus projecting outward? It's like, how do I create my own little universe? You know what I mean? Like, if you look at someone like Tony Robbins, he's got his own little universe. Like someone like Grant Cardone has his own ecosystem. Patrick Bet-David has his own ecosystem. Like, these characters have kind of created their own worlds. You've done it with your brands. And I think it's world building. And so often when people build brands, they think that I have to become an influencer. But what does the word actually mean? It actually means like, how do I alter the perception of others about a thing or about myself? And celebrities and athletes, you would know this better than me. You were doing it when I was in diapers, right? Like, it's how do I create a public persona of a thing? But I think the real art form of personal branding is it's an invitation into my world, into my space, into the way I do things. And there's no right or wrong. It's just like, what's my version of it, right? It's my reality show. It's the David Meltzer reality show. And I think when you start to look at your personal brand as like, I'm not trying to become something else unless you want to create an alter ego like some Twitch streamers do or some musicians do. But for the most part, it's about like, how do I identify what I really am? And what's the unique makeup of me, right? So like, if you look at Joe Rogan, he loves UFC, he loves comedy, he was on Fear Factor. He's got all these like weird things that kind of like form together. He loves hunting, he loves crossbows, you know, jiu-jitsu, all the rest of it. It's like that weird concoction of things makes Joe Joe, and then you have his personality, his belief system, his morals, his perspective of the world. So I think when you can take note of what you are, and then you can figure out a way to formulate content about things you're obsessed with. As long as you're making content about things you're genuinely obsessed with, you're never going to run out of ideas. You're always going to peel back another layer of the onion. But the 90-day brand plan is all about like starting a little campfire. And how do you add a log to the fire every day? How do you produce something every day, some form of piece of content? I know this sounds like menial, but like so many people are afraid to get started because they're like, what's my niche? What's my thing? I have imposter syndrome. I can't teach that. Who am I? I'm not an authority figure. Like, we have these barriers, these hurdles that we need to jump across. And I just tried to help people have the revelation that like, actually, no, you can just start today. Like, all these things that cause fear, they're all just a fugazi. They're a facade. Like, you don't have to listen to them. You could just start producing content. And then through the activity of doing, I believe you discover what you are publicly. You know what I mean? It wasn't until I started making content until about like day 60, I was like, oh, this is my thing. And this is what I'm obsessed with. And that's how I got here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an evolution, not a revolution. The introspective unraveling or revelation that occurs by knowing your own skills, your own knowledge of who and what, and of course your desires. And that continues on as the layers of the onion are taken off. You learn more about yourself and are willing to illuminate even more about ourselves. As you have podcasts and books and an amazing business, Rival, and the All Words branding techniques and things coming out, it still is important to understand not only who you are, but what you want to become. And technology makes that even more difficult in prioritizing what we want to become, because there's so many options, opportunities, and touches of favor with the total addressable community and the technology available to access that community. How are you prioritizing your future of what you want to become?
I love that question. Yeah, and I talk about this in the book as well. And it's like, you got to take note of who you are right now, right? But then, and like what kind of person I am, but then you have to project like, who am I going to become? And this is the weird one, right? Because when I started producing content on social media, the first thing that happened was my colleagues were like, what's the deal with your Instagram? And then I heard whispers around the workplace. People were saying things like, oh, he thinks he's some type of guru or something. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, people are actually like thinking I'm trying to like do something harmful, or like, it was just weird. It was like, oh, the audacity this guy has making content about branding when he works a full-time job. It was just hilarious to me, but I didn't take offense to it. I was like, I just looked at it as like, isn't that interesting? And I learned that from Jim Rohn. He said, if people ever conflict against you, just think about it like, that's interesting, and move on, right? Right. So I just looked at it. I was like, that's interesting. I moved on. But for me, I think when I started to produce content, I had to project like, okay, like Dane, like who am I going to become in 10 years? And if I could choose, and I wasn't concerned about all these people around me, because, you know, eventually, like, what does their opinion matter? It's just air in their head. That's all that opinion is, right? So for me, I look at it as kind of like method acting. Like, you know how actors get a role for a movie and they're like, okay, in this movie, you have to act as a billionaire, you know, maverick of this company, and you do philanthropy and you love humankind, whatever the brief is of the role. It's like, would I actually be able to align myself to that future character? And this is where I started to do it with myself. I was like, okay, one day I want to speak on stages. One day I want to be hanging out with people like yourself and Tony Robbins. One day I want to write books. One day I want to host seminars. One day I want to have a podcast. I'm like, okay, well, what kind of guy does that guy have to be? Like, who do I have to become to actually become that guy? And I was like, okay, well, first and foremost, like, I got to have a good relationship with money. Second, I have to be really good at prioritizing what I spend my time on. I have to know what my time vampires are. Like, what's sucking the energy out of my life? Like, too much time on Netflix, addiction to gaming, you know, addiction, like a lot of people have addiction to adult entertainment, like whatever it is. It's like, what are my vampires? Like, how do I start to push them out of my life? And how do I start to welcome in new things into my life that feed into the character I want to become? So it's like, okay, I've been cast as this role. How do I start method acting now as though I'm that character for that movie? And it sounds crazy, but I started doing it. I started to try to dress like that character. I started to, you know, wake up early and go to the gym and like write down my goals and manifest with a vision board. I know this sounds, you know, some of this is kind of cliche, but I was like, okay, if I have to act this character, what would I do? And just by changing my state, changing my behavior, changing what I did for the first 90 days of building my content, I was like, I'm method acting this character out for 90 days. Like, let's see how far we can take it. And then within literally weeks of doing this and producing content, I had so much money coming in that I quit my job. And then 90 days later, when I was just literally my 90th day producing content and method acting my future Dane, I had $72,000 in a PayPal account, which got locked because they thought I was scamming people, but got unlocked later. But like, I went from $200,000 debt to $72,000 in my PayPal account just in within 90 days of like acting it out, acting my future self out in a way that aligned with me and trying to do good for others. But I think for me, it was just literally getting out of my own way, like just saying like, fuck off to all my fears and all the people that like think they have control over who I should become. It's just like, what do I want to become? And like, what am I passionate about? And when you can really lean into that and just push through the fear barriers anyways, I feel like life gets a lot more exciting and enjoyable.
Certainly does. No need to search for more. Instead, search for I am or I may. What other people think of you or me, Dane, is none of our business. We should concern ourselves with I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. The keys to the methodology. What am I doing to interfere with it? And the great response of I may, when people give me their opinions, I say, I may consider that, or I may do that, or I may be that.
Yeah,
I love that. And including when I sell, I tell people, hey, I may have someone interested in that. And it's amazing today with the size and scope and scale of our communities, just getting people to get back to us. Easiest and fastest way to get someone to get back to you is to say, hey, I may have someone that's interested in buying your shit. And it's surprising how many people get back to us. And when you can get in touch with 1,000 people in less than a minute, you'll be overloaded with options, opportunities, and touches of favor. Dane Walker providing those options, opportunities, touches of favor with his podcast, with his book coming out, the 90-day brand plan, as well as his incredible company, Rival. If you're not following him, you should be. I promise you, it won't disappoint. At Dane Walker Official, Dane Walker, at Dane Walker. Check him out. He's amazing. The Tiger Table, the 90-day brand plan. It's an amazing journey that he's led, and he'll help pull up a seat at the table with him in an abundant, infinite way. Thank you, Dane Walker, for joining me here at the greatest stadium ever created, Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.